I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, 2026 is going to be a year of bare-knuckle politics on the local, state, and national level. The marquee race here in Bexar County is going to be who will be the next Bexar County judge, incumbent Peter Sakai or Democratic primary challenger former Mayor Ron Nirenberg. But there are other races in the Democratic primary for Bexar County District Attorney as the current DA Joe Gonzalez steps back. There are primary challenges for local state House seats in both parties. And don't ignore the impact of the 2025 congressional redistricting. Congressional races have new boundary lines, and that's bringing in new and old faces into the political arena. We're going to take a look at what to expect in politics in 2026. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
As you take time to support organizations that make a difference in your life and in our community, consider making a one-time gift to Texas Public Radio or becoming a sustaining supporter. No matter how you give, you help ensure that trustworthy news remains accessible to all. Listener support makes TPR possible. Together, we can keep this service strong. Give now at tpr.org, and thanks.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There will be a lot of political fireworks and political mudslinging in 2026. This is a midterm election year at a time when many people are politically activated more than normal. And we're going to preview some of the red hot political races today of local, regional, state, national. But we want our listeners really to drive the conversation. What do you have to say? What are you seeing? What are you going to be paying attention to? Which campaigns are you watching? What are you hoping for? So give us a call about what are your expectations for politics in 2026. And our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. With me in the studio to help break all of this down, we're joined by Andrea Drush. She is the local government reporter at the SA Report, San Antonio Report. Andrea, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
And also with us, Sanford Nolan. He is the editor-in-chief at the San Antonio Current in Sanford. It's good to have you back.
Glad to be here.
I want to kick things off with a voicemail that I got this morning. This is what one listener has on his mind as he's looking at politics in 2026.
Hello, my name is Dr. Gary W. Cox. I've watched the political theater of San Antonio and Bexar County for over 75 years, and this is what I think about the Democratic primary race for county judge. At his core, Ron Nirenberg is a career academic who turned career politician. His economic philosophy can best be described as Reaganomics in disguise. His election as Bexar County judge would mean a future of more failed trickle-down economics, benefiting local elites to the detriment of the people of Bexar County. In contrast to Ron Nirenberg, Peter Sakai has led a life of service dedicated to upholding the rule of law, all while working timelessly to create programs, policies, and interventions to ensure justice for victims not historically well served by law, especially the more vulnerable of our society, our children. Peter Sakai is too modest of a man to go into detail about how he spent decades in the trenches, directly impacting the lives of Bexar County's poor, hungry, and abused. Peter Sakai has long been a superstar of Southwest Texas. Bexar County can be greatly diminished if he doesn't return as county judge. The choice this March is stark and obvious if you look beyond the former mayor's slick public persona. Thank you for listening. Dr. Gary W. Cox, DDS, United States Army Dental Corps, Lieutenant Colonel, retired.
That was not an ad, a political ad. Okay, for Judge Sakai. Thank you, Dr. Cox, but you helped set the table for what we want to talk about here. Get your reaction to that, Sanford.
I think he's raised some interesting points there. We were, just talking earlier, right, about how Sakai is a Democrat, He has run as a Democrat in the past, and we have Nuremberg, who has run nonpartisan races as mayor, coming in. And I think there are going to be a lot of people, Democratic voters, who are going to need some persuading by Nuremberg that he's actually in their corner. However, I do think he comes into this race with a lot of name recognition, and, you know, I think it generally among San Antonio voters, a fairly positive sense of who he is. And I think at this point, people who are not familiar with Sakai's track record leading up to him becoming Bexar County judge are still trying to assess what he's accomplished with his one term in that role and what he stands for. So I think that will be the interesting sort of thing to measure here.
Andrea Drush, what do you think?
I think at its core, you have two people with very different approaches to this role based on their personal experience. One, Rod Nuremberg, coming from the city, is seeing an opportunity to continue some of the environmentalist things that he'd worked on earlier in his career. Peter Sakai, coming to it from a role as a judge and more focused on sort of things inside the courthouse, came in wanting to refocus county spending on more basic needs that runs the jail, runs the elections, sorting out the very basic parts of the job, and Nuremberg saying we could do so much more. And that is sort of reflective of many people looking at these county judge races as more of a political stepping stone than maybe in the past. You had Harris County elect Lena Hidalgo, Tim O'Hare in Tarrant County. You have a Webb County judge running for Congress in Henry Cuellar's district. It is sort of looked at differently as a stepping stone now.
I'm wondering how Project Marvel is going to enter into the race for county judge. Both candidates, Nuremberg and Sakai, both have been involved in shepherding Project Marvel ahead, but it really has been Ron Nuremberg. He was mayor when they cooked up Project Marvel, and he, you know, left office and put it on Gene Ortiz's Jones's desk as he left. But and there's still a lot of animosity, particularly among Democrats, I think, who are not crazy about Project Marvel. And Judge Sakai, he put it to the voters, and we saw that at best it was lukewarm approval of the Project Marvel efforts that he put
out
there.
And let's be clear here, it wasn't Project Marvel in a broad sense. It was a Spurs arena, which is part of Project Marvel.
Sure, but that might be lost in the wash. So I'm wondering, you know, if callers, if listeners, if voters are going to see this as another Project Marvel proxy election. And Andrew, what do you think about that?
I think if you roll back the clock a little bit, when Nuremberg first started talking about this race, there was a lot of questions about whether Peter Sakai really supported that, the county money for the Spurs Arena. The county had put it up to voters, but he wasn't doing much to campaign. They're not supposed to campaign for it, but he wasn't, you know, outwardly supporting it. And then Nuremberg comes into this race, and the two of them are cutting ads for the PAC supporting it. It, like, had a lot of utility for those who wanted to see that project happen, to have those two running against each other. Up to the deadline, it wasn't clear whether voters would approve it, and then it would obviously be a humongous focus of this race, but it was approved, and now it seems like sort of a non-issue, and it's sort of taken something away from Nuremberg in this race.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think it could be a liability for him as well. I mean, if there continues to be...
When he was mayor, there was a lot of secrecy about all this.
Yeah.
No transparency.
Yeah, and it was very obvious, I think, to a lot of people who watch politics, that it was moved ahead very quickly because Nuremberg and others on council wanted to sort of be able to go out and say, hey, here's the legacy we're leaving. And that legacy may be something that comes back to haunt him if there's enough anti-Marvel sentiment among voters.
But you could spin it in a way where both of these candidates had a hand in bringing along Project Marvel.
Oh, they both touched it. That's no doubt about that.
All right, so coming up on a break here, when we come back, I'm going to get Sean and Robert on the phone, on the air. They're on our boards now. And if you want to join the conversation, talk about what's happening with the Bexar County judge race, the Democratic primary, Also, the district attorney race, we're looking at some of the House district races here as well, statewide, what's happening with the Senate race. That's really going to be the big marquee race statewide. James Rallarico, Representative Crockett, going for the Democratic nomination, and also the Republican nomination. That is going to be extremely interesting. It already is, with Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of the state, going after incumbent Senator John Cornyn, and how that's going to go down, and if Paxton gets the nomination, is he beatable? And would that change 30 years of drought for the Democratic Party in the state of Texas? Call in 833-877-8255. Sean and Robert, stand by. I'm going to get you on the air when we come back in 1 minute. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're jawboning about politics in 2026. With me in the studio, Andrea Dresch from the SA Report and Sanford Nolan, Editor-in-Chief at the San Antonio Current. Let's go to Sean on the phones. And Sean, you're on the air. Go ahead.
So I understand that these positions do not require a legal background, although it does, I believe that the law says you should be well knowledgeable of Texas law. The fact that Nuremberg does not have a law degree, communications background, I think that's insulting to the people who spend their life studying the law, who try to make this their passion. And Sakai has been doing this. He has this background. He's been doing this forever. I think that the level of entitlement to Nuremberg to think that he can just come in and do this job without having this background is very insulting. Thank you.
Sean, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And if you want to join in, 833-877-8255. That's our number. Call in and get your reaction to that, Andrea Dresch.
Yeah, obviously, this job does not require a law degree. You're a county judge, but you're kind of like the mayor of the county. It's a wide-ranging role. The county, you know, permits development, does all sorts of other things. But Sakai came into this role with his background as 2 decades as a civil court judge and wanted to make the role more focused on sort of those basic parts of it, making sure that the courts had the funding that they needed. You're overseeing the jail, focusing on those issues. And Nuremberg doesn't bring that to the table necessarily. Is it required? I don't know.
No, it's not required. Well, does have a judge's disposition when Sakai does. So, and Sanford.
I think what Nuremberg could bring to this role, and I think what he's going to argue is that he's going to do much like what Nelson Wolf did, which was become a deal maker, which is something he wasn't particularly good at the first part of his time in the mayor's office, but eventually evolved into somebody who knew how to sort of put those pieces together.
Like economic development?
Well, in terms of building consensus, you know, among council members, and I think he could do that pretty adeptly on the court as well.
Well, what's interesting is that that Ron Nuremberg picked this fight. So, you know, Judge Peter Sakai is the incumbent. I think it's up to Ron. The burden is on him to come up with an argument for why voters should fire Sakai and that he should be hired to be the county judge. I don't see anything, and I don't know, I'm not running these campaigns, but, you know, did Sakai do anything egregiously bad while in office that says he should be fired, Sanford?
No, I don't think so. I think this is basically an opportunistic move by Ron Nuremberg, right? I mean,
he could have run for any office.
Huh?
He could have run for a lot.
He considered running for governor at one point.
Yeah, but
he could have run for any of these open congressional seats.
But if you look at where he was, you know, when he was talking to the consultants about a possible gubernatorial run and all that, is the guy had no money in the bank to do any of that stuff. He had no name recognition to run for statewide office. I mean, admittedly, he, you know, his name was out there as a potential cabinet member should Biden be reelected and that sort of thing. But that doesn't translate into winning a gubernatorial race, a statewide race in Texas. So I think he would have needed to have been in politics a lot longer, have a lot more name recognition outside of San Antonio, and a lot deeper pockets to have pulled off any of that. And I think most likely he recognized that if he was going to run for office in the near term, this was the office he was going to have to run for.
It took Sakai a while to build up to what his vision was for economic development and those sort of big deals. He came in with such, like, you know, organizational changes that he wanted to make at the county, and was like, I'll think about what big projects come next. And then Marvel landed on his plate. And up until, 7:30 p.m. on November 3rd, it did seem like there was going to be a humongous differentiating issue in this race. And then there wasn't.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to another caller. We have Robert. Our number is 833-877-8255. Robert, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Look, I've been San Antonio all my life. I'm 73. I follow politics extensively. And I really appreciate the service Judge Sakai has provided this county, this city. He is respected in a tremendously all over the county, because he's a fine person, he was a fine judge. And I think that just because of the respect so many people have for him, and he knows county government because he's been involved in county government as a judge for so long, and now as a county judge, he is a person for the job. The learning curve as far as knowing county government is not there for him. He knows it already. And we support him wholeheartedly, even though, you know, I kind of like Ron, but I think it's an opportunistic move on his behalf. And Sakai is a better candidate, in my opinion.
All right, Robert, thank you for your call. And listeners, the number is 833-877-8255. If you want to jump in the conversation, tell us how you see this race for Bexar County Judge from the Democratic primary, Ron Nirenberg or the incumbent Peter Sakai. Looking at the district attorney's race, Joe Gonzalez not seeking re-election, and we have eight candidates that have filed for the Democratic nomination. But none of these names, I mean, if you're not one of these gladflies at the county courthouse, I don't think you may know any of these names, Andrea.
Would you like to run through those names?
I got former 4th Court of Appeals Justice Luz Elena Chapa, mm-hmm. prosecutors Oscar Salinas and Angelica Carrion Powers, criminal defense attorneys Veronica Legarreta, Sharon Locke, and Meredith Chacon. And she ran in the Republican DA primary in 2022. Jane Davis, who served as the chief of the juvenile section for the DA's office. And James I've never met these people. I don't know them. So, yeah.
We have eight Democrats and one Republican. When District Attorney Joe Gonzalez announced that he wasn't going to run for re-election, there was this quick turnaround in which Ron Rahel seemed like he was going to run and started a PAC. And then once he took his name out of contention, it opened the floodgates to all of these other candidates, all these lesser known candidates. And that is kind of a theme I think that you see across a lot of the races in this primary, is that for lack of a big name candidate, you have 12 or 15 little known candidates, which makes the primary a little complicated. But there's only one Republican running, Ashley Foster. This crowd of Democrats is, I think, people would really be interested in something to help them understand who these people are and what their backgrounds are before the election. We're working on a voter guide. We're also, fingers crossed, working on a debate, perhaps. But this is the race that in 2022 was Mark LaHood against Joe Gonzalez was a huge race. You know, a lot of energy on both sides there. And countywide, the Republican-Democrat races in November don't seem nearly as exciting this time.
Yeah, so we also had Trey Martinez Fisher, state representative. He was toying with jumping in this race, and then he got out. I mean, his name would have been instantly recognizable. I don't know in a good or a bad way how that worked.
I think you have to ask with this particular race, too, why is it that two of the most viable contenders have said, I'll take a pass on this one.
It's not a great job. It's
I think whoever steps into this role is going to inherit a big mess they're going to have to help clean up, and I think there's going to be an interest in seeing them move very quickly to do that.
They're short-staffed. They don't have the pay for the prosecutors. They are trying to, like, pay prosecutors with overtime, the backlog, the criticisms, they'll be stepping into a mess.
I think it, without a doubt, if things were different there, Gonzalez might have decided to stick around, you know? So it's an interesting thing, and it'll be interesting to see how whoever steps into it hits the ground running and tries to solve a lot of the problems that really plagued Gonzalez, you know?
So we have statewide races. That's probably going to bring a lot of people to the polls, particularly the marquee race is the one for U.S. Senate. Republican John Cornyn is being challenged in the Republican primary by Ken Paxton, our current Attorney General. There are others on the ballot on the Republican primary side. And it seems like, according to polling, that Ken Paxton with Republican primary voters is very popular. There is a U.S. Representative Wesley Hunt of Houston also on there. He's seen as someone else who could shake things up. But,
kind of a spoiler, yeah.
I'm not sure a spoiler for who, though. You know, I don't think he'll take votes away from Cornyn, and it's unlikely.
The Cornyn camp seems worried about that, though.
I know, but that doesn't mean that's the reality.
Well,
and a long list of candidates in that race, but three major ones, and you have to get to 50% to win this primary, so almost guaranteed runoff between two of these three guys.
Right, and so if it gets to a runoff between Cornyn and Paxton, I think the easy money is going to be on Paxton.
So incredibly much money has already come into this state to influence that primary from Republicans who think that this is a better bet to put your money in this primary and try and get Cornyn through than to fight it out in the general election, that if they can get Cornyn through, that he'll be okay in the general election. And, I mean, tens of millions of dollars. And then on top of that, Wesley Hunt comes in as a third candidate and had $6 million spent on his behalf by outside groups before he'd even entered the race to try and up his name ID in here. We're like at $30 million in a Republican primary.
Yeah. So, but we have Democrats who are, frothing at the opportunity of being able to take on Ken Paxton, House District Representative James Tallarico, and Member of Congress Jasmine Crockett. And that's also where Democrats are wondering, how is that going to work out? Jasmine Crockett is from Dallas, seems to be very popular in those big urban areas. And Tallarico, he's making a play for the Latino vote and also in San Antonio. So, could that winner of the Democratic primary be enough to take down Ken Paxton? That's the big, big question, Sanford.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I know there's been some worry among the Democratic establishment that, that Crockett is sharp-tongued. She's been willing to go toe-to-toe with Trump and other MAGA figures. But does that play well in a general election? They think,
but she also excites people.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think both of those
she could bring people to the polls who don't normally vote.
I think both of those candidates are potentially exciting candidates, and if they play their cards right, we could see one of them sort of up the water for everybody, much in the way that Beto O'Rourke did when he ran against Ted Cruz, and you would see down ballot Democrats benefiting from that.
And Democrats spared themselves the three-way race. Colin Allred was in this race, got back out. And interestingly, at the beginning of the cycle, you had every ambitious Democrat saying that they wanted to run for Senate. They were trying to figure out whether they could space people out across all of the statewide races. And actually, everyone just wanted to run for Senate. And that is because there's national money to bring in. The type of money that you would need to run a statewide race is hard to do if it's just a Texas race, if you have national money coming in. And it's a 54-46 the Senate majority right now, 54-46.
Yeah.
And so flipping enough seats to flip the Senate is really hard. You've got North Carolina, Maine, and you only have a third of the senators up at a time, and the other races are in really, really red states. So when Texas is your fourth best bet, it's tough.
That's a tough bet, yeah. But people are counting on the fact that we have sagging popularity by President Donald Trump. We have calls that we need Article 1 part of our government, you know, the legislature, to do its job in order to hold the president accountable and assert their constitutional role and put a check on the executive power, which has not been happening over, since Donald Trump has been taken office for just over a year.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the voters that are going to be motivated by that, those voters are going to cast ballots against either Paxton or Cornyn. Cornyn has gone so far out of his way to align himself with Trump, it's not funny.
All right, we're taking a break here. I've got Rick and Lynn. I'm going to get you on the air when we come back, and you can tell us what you're thinking about with politics. And the number to call in, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this break. The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about politics 2026, and buckle up. This is going to be quite a roller coaster year for politics on the local level, the regional, and also statewide, national. What are you paying attention to? What do you want to see happen? Which candidate, which campaign, which congressional seat do you think really we need to be paying attention to? What you tell us really makes a difference. So give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Rick on the phones. And Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. No, just an observation. Maybe we should be consolidating some of these offices, like the county. Maybe the county should be rolled into the city if they're not able to meet their requirements, such as carrying out justice and other functions that they seem to be failing at. There's also been some friction in policy decisions. I know, like, but there was a... something regarding the rollout of the COVID shots, the county felt it necessary to have their own little metro health department set up. And, you know, you always hear about the, hey, they're not meeting the requirements of the attorneys, right? So someone should look at maybe merging the county and the city together. Anyways, that's my observation. Thank you.
All right. Rick, thank you for that that thought. And you guys want to weigh in on this?
I do recall there was talk of that how many decades ago now? Maybe it was 20 years ago or so.
Well, you got to take into account how many people now live in the unincorporated parts of Bear County. Well over 300,000 people. I mean, it's like the size of a community like Waco live in parts of Bear County that are not in a municipal area. If we were to combine, it's impossible to happen. It just cannot happen. But the reason why the county has to take on things like providing, you know, medical resources and dog catching and all these other things out, and though they didn't have to do it before, is because there are so many people that don't have those services. They're moving into these areas. So every day, more and more people are moving out there. And so if you combine, you wouldn't be able to combine the county into the city. You'd be combining the city into the county. And then I think you would see a drop off in services throughout the city proper. And I don't think people would go for that.
My recollection was when that was being discussed. And again, I think it was about 20 years ago. I could be wrong about that. Some of the same concerns came up. And now I think they're just exacerbated by the size of the number of people living outside of city limits.
So that's just something that it's just not being talked about. It's not on the table, especially when you get into the nitty gritty of things. Did you have
the health and the dog catcher stuff? Those are two very good examples of places in which the county has expanded in the last few years using federal pandemic relief. And that money, it's unclear how it will sustain all of the things that it has taken on once that money dries up.
But it shows actually law enforcement in the areas outside of San Antonio, in these really populated parts of Bear County, is dependent on the sheriff's office. And the sheriff's office is undermanned when it comes to providing, you know, the law enforcement, community enforcement, you know, code enforcement, all sorts of things that are happening in the county. it's a whole different ballgame when you don't live in the city. So there's a lot going on there. It really needs to be talked about more in terms of, like, what's it like to live out there and deal with these problems where you don't have a municipal government.
And how do we get out ahead of it? Because we know it's just going to continue to grow.
You cannot, because of our, pro-growth, pro-development way. And we're seeing it already with Wahalote Ranch issue.
That's a good one, yeah.
All right, let's go to another caller. And our number is 833-877-8255. We really want our listeners to drive this conversation. Let's go to Lynn. Hey, Lynn, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey. Yeah, thank you. There's a DA candidate that you guys the news media keeps leaving out because he's not running as a Democrat or a Republican. He's running as an independent. His name is Jason Wolf. He has been a judge. He's worked in the DA's office, and now he works as a criminal defense attorney. And he's seen it all from all sides. And he's not running in a primary, though, because he's an independent. So he keeps getting left out. And I just want to put his name out there because a lot of people know about him. A lot of people follow him on TikTok. And he does have a lot of experience, and he seems to know what he's doing.
All right, Lynn, thank you for that. He's also the nephew of the former county judge, Nelson Wolf. And Nelson Wolf has said he will not endorse him. I think it's really because Nelson Wolf, he is a party guy. And it's just, being left out is really kind of, when you talk about party primaries, that's what we're talking about now. That's, you're not in a party primary. So maybe when we get closer to the general election in November, that we'll be talking more about the independent candidates.
Yeah, as someone trying to track all of these candidates and keep up with the filing deadlines and whatnot, the independent candidates will collect signatures to get on the November ballot after the primary runoff is over. So, and it's also hard to track down the third party candidates at this point because they choose their candidates through a different nominating process. They're not on the primary ballot. And so sort of trying to keep things, we're talking about the primary first, but it's almost impossible to find a list of who these people are. They had to file paperwork with the state, and that's not readily accessible. There's no party keeping track of them. At this point, we lean hard on the parties to tell us who their candidates are. And if they're an independent candidate, they have to find us.
Yeah. Another caller. Let's go to Randy. And Randy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. So, I'm an East Sider, and while we're throwing around big topics like combining city and county and things like Project Marvel, a pittance of Project Marvel maybe could have been used for buying out the railroads. They're used little or nothing inside town, but it really slices and dices, ties up major real estate on the East Side, and things like Project Marvel won't do anything for the East Side compared to what taking out the railroads would. You could take that whole rail yard by 35 in New Braunfels and make that into a huge city park. That would be a real feather in the cap for the city. I just think that'd be wonderful. I realize Project Marvel's a result of almost a criminal state tax law that enables people to go in and pick that for those purposes. But maybe we should have politicians this year change that. And get it so that we can use monies of that magnitude to do things like make the railroads go around town instead of right through it.
All right, Randy, thank you for that. When it comes to railroads, they are basically a government unto themselves. They really, and we ran into that when we were trying to work with the railroad to have a commuter rail between San Antonio and Austin. You may not see it, but these places they're hopping right now. The railroads are being used frequently for moving freight in and out of Mexico, and trying to buy them out would probably cost more money than we're going to spend on Project Marvel. There's a lot going on there, and talking about private property, and they're not for sale. So it would basically take a lot more effort than I think we have at our fingertips in order to deal with that situation. But turning back to these local party primaries, the Democratic primary for House District 125, which has been represented by State Representative Ray Lopez, he's not seeking reelection. He's had a lot of health problems. And so that has opened up the gate for a four-way Democratic primary. A lot of interesting people thrown their hats in for that. And so, Andrew Dresch from the San Antonio Report, what do you see happening for this seat?
So we've got 10 state House representatives who touch Bexar County or have a portion of Bexar County. We have 7 Democrats and 3 Republicans. This is the only retirement of the bunch. We have 1 Republican, John Lujan, running for Congress instead. This is a safely blue West Side district, but it's created this opening for an up-and-coming Democrat. It has 4 candidates. It has Ray Lopez as former chief of staff. It has a leader from the SAISD Teachers Union, but it also has this constable who has a spotty history here in Bexar County. I'm going to let you take that, Sanford.
Michelle Barrientos Vela.
Yeah.
No, former constable.
Eventually, she was acquitted, but...
She was charged with tampering with records, but, Dylan Collier on KSAT.
There was relentless TV news coverage of her antics in that role as constable. And I think even if people don't fully understand the baggage surrounding her, even if they don't remember intimately all the details around the court case and whatnot, I think there's going to be a big black mark over her name for people who were tuned into the media at the time.
But she
she's going to have a difficult race ahead of her.
So we have Lopez's former chief of staff, Donovan Rodriguez. We have an SAISD teachers union leader, Adrian Rea. He's also filed for the office. And they have this Carlos Antonio Raymond. He's on the ballot quite frequently. He's ran for this as a Republican before. Now he's seeking the Democratic nomination.
Yeah, so he ran for city council in 2025 and came to our debate and said that he had run as a Democrat and was really mistreated by the Democratic Party, so therefore he had joined the Republican Party, and now he is back to running as a Democrat again. He had even sued the Democratic Party, I think, after his first race.
And he likes to have a big billboard on the back of a truck, and he'll park it on the side of a highway, and that's kind of how he campaigns.
He's everywhere. He is at every public event that I go to. He is in the pictures. He's everywhere.
At least you have to respect his relentless approach. Whether it'll get him elected, that's up to the voters. But I hate to see Ray Lopez go, but his health, of course, needs to take priority. We're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. Charlotte, we'll get you on the air when we come back from the break. You can call in, folks. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. I'm really interested in what people have to say about the James Tallarico and Jasmine Crockett, and if they have a preference or they just want to see a strong Democrat get that nomination, or if they have a preference about John Cornyn and Ken Paxton, please call in. We really need to crowdsource what is happening out in the world. The information's not in the studio. It's you. You're the information. Give us a call, 833-877-8255. Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies, thanks for listening. We're talking about Texas politics, San Antonio politics, and what's happening all around. You can call in with your comments, hot takes, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Charlotte. And Charlotte, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. I just wanted to let you know that I've listened to your show a long time, and I love your interview style. You are a master at what you do. But my comment is that I love both Tallarico and I love Crockett equally. And I have no idea who I'm going to vote for because they are both fantastic for different reasons. And I've just never been more undecided in a primary than I am now.
Are you concerned about what they call electability? I don't really don't like going there because I think people are when they say, Jasmine Crockett can't get elected statewide, I think that you're not just your bias, but maybe your racism is showing a little bit but I don't think that's fair or appropriate. But what do you think about electability?
I think that is further confusing because she excites people. And that's what we need right now. We are a non-voting state, and we need something to excite people, whereas Tallarico probably appeals to a larger group of folks. He's got this different kind of kinder, gentler
persona, and I have no idea what I'm going to do. We just have an embarrassment of riches in the Democratic Party, and I'm confused. I don't know what to do.
Well, just my limited time talking to James Tallarico is he may come across as kinder, gentler, but that he has some bite to him. He is a fighter. So
if you've watched him in action in the State House, he knows how to land those zingers.
Yeah. So thank you for your call. It's very important to hear from that. So, Andrew, how do you think that's going to work out?
I have questions about that, like electability or ability to win the middle. It seems like the modern campaign is very little about winning over the middle. It's about exciting and turning out your voters. So in both cases, you have national parties making this argument for electability and centrism. And it doesn't seem like that's hardly a part of the modern campaign.
I mean, if you look at the near miss that we had with Beto O'Rourke, right, he was not a middle-of-the-road candidate. If you looked at his policy standpoints, he was unabashedly to the left, and he ran as such, but I think he delivered it in an appealing way. He did not pull any punches, and I think before he damaged his political brand with some of the things he said when he ran for president, I think shows how one or both of these people can continue be political stars in Texas.
Well, Tallarico has shown an ability to raise money.
For sure.
He's been bringing in multiple millions of dollars. His fundraising is no slouch. And that's probably something else people are the money raising primary issue. So that's also.
We will get some clarity on that on the 15th is when our last 6 months of campaign finance reports are due. And we'll learn more about the county judge race. We'll learn more about the DA's race and the Senate race for sure.
Well, we'll be looking at the San Antonio report for what you got on that. Let's go to Randall. And Randall, thanks for calling in. What do you got going on?
Well, you've moved into state politics a little bit, and I have been rolling my eyes over this hue and cry recently that the Texas Republicans have been making about Democrats, quote, crossing over, unquote, to vote in the Republican primary. They are either ignoring or have conveniently forgotten Rush Limbaugh all over the airwaves in early 2008. Urging Texas Republicans to cross over and vote in the Texas Democratic primary that year. Specifically, and I'm sorry to be so blunt, but this is true, Limbaugh was telling everybody, vote for the white woman, not the black man. As usual with conservative Republicans, do as I say, not as I do.
All right, Randall, thank you for that. So goodness gracious, hypocrisy in politics. I never thought I'd see the day. The Republican Party is now trying to create a closed primary system where only people who have registered as Republicans can vote in their party primaries because they're concerned about Democrats or people who are not Republican or independents voting in their primary. And I think people should be able to vote for whoever they want, wherever they want, as long as they vote only once. But do you see more Democrats moving into, or anyone else? I mean, it's crazy how we have so few people voting in the Republican primary, and whoever wins the Republican primary ends up basically getting rubber stamped into political office in Texas.
Oh, and we see a lot of decisions made based on trying to guess what that 3% of the electorate wants.
Right, and these are the most extreme people in Texas. And you're wondering, how do we end up with policies that the general public in Texas do not support, things like vouchers and bathroom bills
anti-Ten Commandments in the schools and things like that. Yeah, absolutely.
It's because of the way the primaries are set up and who gets to vote and how that turns into a de facto statewide election, Andrew.
at this point, though, who gets to vote despite their best efforts? The primaries are still open to everyone. You can walk in. They'll ask you which ballot you want. You don't have to have any party affiliation. You can cast your ballot in whichever primary. And that is where so many big decisions are decided. If you are taking that Republican ticket, you're going to weigh in on all of these statewide races, and those people will most likely then be statewide officials. You have an open race for attorney general. You have that exciting Senate race. If you take your Democratic primary in Bexar County, you're going to have a lot more candidates on there. In the judicial primaries, you're going to have those county races, and those will also be pretty much over after the primary.
One distinction between what, you know, the caller Randall was talking about with Rush Limbaugh and other people selling go party, you know, go into the other party and vote. They were talking about voting in bad faith. I think everyone has a responsibility to vote for the best candidate. So if you're going to vote in the Republican primary, it's not to sabotage, or, you know, you're not going to go over there and vote for Ken Paxton because you think he can't win in a general election. You should vote for who you think is the best candidate. And I think maybe if more people did that, then moderates in the Republican Party could win their primaries, and then they could actually, you know, move more towards the center. It's not to be malicious in your voting, but to do the best thing. You try to get the best people you can to represent you and do a good job having Texas prosper.
I would be curious how many people actually do that, right? Because if you show up in the opposing party's primary to cast a ballot that essentially is aimed at hurting that party's chances, you have sacrificed your ability to vote for the candidates in your own party that you think will
right
better its chances. But so maybe, I don't think it happens a whole lot.
It doesn't.
But, okay, going way back, you know, I'm old. And when I was, you know, 60s and 70s, you know, there was no Republican Party in Texas. Everyone voted in the Democratic Party. You know, John Tower was the person that won the Senate seat that as the first Republican who broke that hold. And it was everyone voted in the Democratic primary. And it was, you had the conservative Democrats versus the liberal Democrats like Ann Richards. And that's where all the action was at. But, you know, at least more people had a voice in Texas. When you have a party system that we have today, where such a few number of people are deciding who will be our candidates and they become elected to general office later on, so few people have a voice. And that's why we end up with policies and a government that really doesn't care about what the general population of Texans think. They don't care about data centers and AI taking over our lives and taking our water and using up our electricity and the cost of living and the high affordability issues that we have now, because they're not answerable to them. People have got to get involved. People have got to vote in these primaries. And at the very least, you know, if you don't have to be a Democrat, you can be an independent and vote in these primaries. That's the problem.
Preach, brother.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, so that's why we try to cover these things. And so do you think that we're going to see a high turnout in these party primaries, Andrea?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the Senate race is drawing so much interest, so much to offer on both of these tickets that's so interesting. And clearly callers agree that these are exciting races. I don't know what that does to turnout.
Yeah, I think this on both sides,
I mean, given
because
all
of the Senate race, I think
we're going to see that we're having these days. We're invading Venezuela. We're hauling people away with ICE. We're, you know, all this illegal corruption that's happening in the White House. I mean, people should be getting involved and they should be demanding accountability. This is the time. This is the time to get involved. You may not like politics because politics is dirty and scummy and all these other things. Yeah, it is. But if you don't get involved and you don't vote and work for candidates who you think can fix this, then it's never going to change.
Back to the recruitment issue, you're looking at so many races that have so many candidates in there. And I think what we saw in this last municipal election is what that kind of drove people away. If they didn't, they looked at a list of 20 candidates, they weren't wanting to make a choice, and then came out more in the runoff. And we have some congressional races here like Texas 21, where Chip Roy is running for attorney general. And you have a humongous list of Republicans running. Same
13,
in Texas 35.
13. Running for the to replace Chip Roy, Republicans. That's
I would say, though, I mean, just paying a minimum of attention to the congressional district in which you vote and spending a little time familiarizing yourself with these candidates would do a great service.
Right.
To you we'll as be covering a voter them. And to society
in general.
I know
the Antonio Report will be putting out great information. We'll be having candidate debates and forums and trying to get people to know who these people are and they can make informed decisions, you know. And so this is happening sooner than you think. You know, the primary is in March. Runoff will be in May. General election will be in November. This is happening now, and we got to start paying attention now. So I want to thank you, Andrea Drush, government reporter, SA Report, and Sanford Nolan, editor-in-chief, San Antonio Current. This is The Source.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.